So let's not worry about it, but we're going to get going. So this is what our supply chain looks like sort of now. You can just imagine if Wile E. Coyote designed it, how well it actually works. However, we are capable of continuing to stay on air, and we have been for 50 years because of viewers like you. So thank you, and keep donating, because that's my paycheck. So this is where we're going. And this also animates, and I had some Star Trek type stuff in there, but don't worry about it. We'll get to that later. So artificial intelligence. You heard a lot about that today, and we talk about how we're going to use different things in here. And I got to tell you right now, the whole idea of artificial intelligence, no. That's not what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about machine learning, because artificial intelligence in the space that we're in right now doesn't actually exist. Once machines start talking to each other, creating their own languages, actually starting to do things that make us really uncomfortable, that's when we'll get to artificial intelligence. Until then, we're not there. And when people say artificial intelligence, this is usually the look that I give them. My staff actually knows this look because I give it to them because they read a lot of things, they come back and they talk about, ooh, artificial intelligence. No, machine learning. And we're training models to actually do what we normally do. Now, training the models, we have to also keep in mind that as a person who's training this, we also have a tendency to train them with our own biases. We gotta be careful, because if we train them with our own biases, at some point, something like this is going to happen to us. And this is not gonna be a good situation, because when they start crawling up the windows and begin to come for us, what are we gonna do? Well, once again, that's where the machine learning comes in for us, and if we do it right, that will be our safety net. So, let's get back to what we're really here to talk about. We had a little fun there, but we're talking about a harmonious cohabitation with the robots. That's really what we're trying to do at PBS, is figure out how we are going to do what we do better and more efficiently by the use of machine learning and by the use of bots and robots. So, the rules. I think pretty much anybody who's into science fiction, you kind of know these rules, right? Robots can't hurt us. They're only here to help us, blah, blah, blah. That's pretty much the way it goes, all right? I've been in the science fiction a very, very long time. You're talking about a kid who was a comic book fiend, all right? So what we're gonna talk about is a couple of things, how we collaborate within PBS in order to get this done, the goals and purpose of what it is that we're doing, and the design and approach on how we actually did it. And then we'll talk about the evolving skill sets, because someone earlier talked about, what do you do when you have an existing staff, and how do you get them ready for what's coming? So we'll talk about that a little bit too. So, responsibilities. My team is ops, engineering, and distribution, and pretty much everything up there is what we're responsible for. From the moment a project is greenlit until the moment we deliver it to you over any device, my team takes care of all of that. We work with our digital products team because they're the ones who actually come up with all the apps and the ways that we can actually do this that are non-traditional. And when I say non-traditional, I'm talking about things that are not your over-the-top or your linear broadcast. Everything else is pretty much on our products team to develop those things, and that's where we start bringing in a whole lot of collaborative tools and tool sets between our different groups. So what's our goal and our purpose? Our purpose right now is to really redefine how we do all of that. So as I said, from the moment something is greenlit, when we acquire it, to the moment that we deliver it, all of those things are changing right now, and they're changing extremely, extremely fast. So the reason that we're doing this is because we want this to be the last forklift that we ever have to do. Those of you who are in the broadcast business or in the distribution business, you understand that you used to build large facilities. Those large facilities used to house master control, used to house post-production, used to house all your studios and all those types of things. Your upstream production is still there. It's still needed. However, distribution and processing of content, quality control of content, all of those things can now be either virtualized or they can be made more efficient through the help of the robots. So, a little bit about what we do. This is us, this is our metrics. We have a facility that was built in 2005, and a lot of the technology is still there. It was built to do 750 hours of content and 1,000 at peak. That 1,000 was not doing anything with the systems. That 1,000 was overtime and burning people out. We are now doing 2,100 hours of content in that same facility. We've made some incremental changes that have helped us get there, but it's still taxing. we are able to keep our air reliability up. We've been at the same number, 4.9s for 18 months consecutively, and we've been above our corporate metric, which is actually 99.95 for 48 months consecutively. 6.3 petabytes on site of archive. That's what we have on site. And then we have another 130,000 physical assets from 1969 until this afternoon that are inside of our remote tape site. That's a lot of data. That's a lot of stuff. And this is where the machines are going to help us. Because a lot of that content, the only metadata that we have from that content is what's on the label of that reel, of that box, of that film canister. That's all you've got. To have someone sit in front of all of that and actually log all of that would really be painful, and it's an experiment that I just don't have the money or the time to have someone do. So we look to the robots. So how are we gonna do this? So we decided in this exploration that we're doing, we're gonna break this down really into three different sections. First section is how we acquire it. So we've come up with a media gateway. The media gateway has built-in machine learning. And we're working with another company that is a sponsor here, but since I am in the hub of another company, I won't say their name, but it's AWS. Oh, I said their name. But don't worry, we got Microsoft in there too. AWS is in the middle of this, helping us with our machine learning at the very beginning. So if you think about something coming into your environment, when it comes into the environment, the first thing that you want to do is that if it doesn't have metadata, you want to actually create metadata and put metadata with it. Create smart content or enabled media, whichever one of those terms you decide to use, that's the one that we're doing. We're pulling all that together to do that. In the center of all this, we have what we call our media bus. The media bus is where all the processing happens. Once again, we are training models to help us to actually use the metadata that we inject at the beginning to decide what goes where and how does it get to where it needs to be. And then on the back end of that, we've got our distribution, which has all of the different ways that we actually push things out. Once again, machine learning comes into play to actually move that content through distribution and decide where we're going to actually deliver it. So we take this model a little bit deeper, and then we get into what we're looking at, which is the actual functional way that we feel that we can do this. We're unable to actually take this and make it move as quickly as we would like to. We can't just really build this model out right now and just have it work. So what we actually have to do is we've got to come into this hybrid stage. So you've heard of people being in the cloud and so forth and so on. We're sort of in the fog. We're a little on the ground. We're a little in the sky. That's where we are. Okay, so you can see where the gateway is in the little green box. And then in that center area where we've got our little marching ants, that's where a lot of machine learning and modeling is actually taking place. We're working with a couple of companies like Gray Meta and a few others that are helping us to actually do this kind of stuff. You notice that we've got two gray bars there. Those two gray bars are probably the most important portions of this model, the media director and the translator. You heard them talk earlier in the panel right before me about APIs and how wonderful APIs are and how they've actually changed the world. Well, that's a great thing, but what if you have so many older disparate systems that actually need to talk to each other, and then we have to take all of that metadata that's a part of that and bring this into a new model that currently is being built and up until now didn't really exist. You've got to find some sort of aggregator for all those APIs. That's where the translator comes in. By the way, the code name for that translator is Megalodon. So that goes back to my marine biology major days that I changed to technology, and my mother had to pay for two more years of college. So the megalodon, as we like to call it, is there because it's the apex predator. It is going to eat all of the data coming in from those older systems. And even though there is not a Rosetta Stone today, some of the things that the folks are doing at HBO is going to help us get there. And we're watching very closely. As a matter of fact, yes, we did poach a person from HBO, from their metadata section, Sally Holland, and we brought her up with us. And we brought Sally in there because Sally's really smart, and we're hoping that she can help us get to where it is that we're trying to go. Sorry, HBO, we apologize, and we hope that you'll be friendly with us. But Sally's doing a great job helping us get to what we call an enterprise metadata manager and an enterprise metadata model all in one. So getting us there will then help us to figure out how do we start to create taxonomy that we need in order for all this stuff to work. So once we get this model actually happening, what's going to take place is that the media director is going to actually know where everything lives. Once again, machine learning. And we're doing that through both Microsoft and AWS, because Microsoft is actually the platform on which we have our rights management. And our rights management is how we're actually going to take a lot of this information and then create a lot of the metadata-driven workflows that we plan to actually use and push through. Now, within all of this stuff, at the very beginning of this, we've got Prime Focus handling our media gateway for us. Now, Prime Focus has a lot of built-in things within their system, but then they were able to work with us to even create more so that we could actually start to inject this media with the metadata as it gets through this process. So we talked about the metadata gateway, media gateway, and I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but we did launch it just June 30th and got that out the door. Things are going very well. So one of the business cases that we're looking at, remember I told you about that 130,000 assets of content? We've got to figure out how we're going to do this and what we're going to do with it. One of the things that we're able to do with Curio is actually allow them to use that content after digitization, pull it through, and then use machine learning to actually do things like voice recognition, environmental recognition, object recognition. So they can start to tell us where something was created, when it was actually created, who's actually in it. That allows us to be able to create a model for us that we can continue to train over time, and each round gets better and better and better. So the other thing is media orchestration. Once again, getting back to the metadata-driven workflows and how do we actually drive what it is that we're doing. That is where, again, we're taking metadata that's been injected into media. We're actually using it to create workflows that will take us from our legacy systems and allow us to use cloud-based workflows that up until this time was actually not a real option for us at PBS. So currently we have about 835 workflows just to get our work done on a daily basis. A lot of those workflows are in place that way because each project was built on a linear platform. And those linear platforms created linear workflows. Now the problem with being in sort of the fog is this legacy thing where you have these linear workflows that they're living in a non-linear environment, not a very efficient way to operate. So what we're doing now is we're migrating, as I said, and we've got about 200 of them done. We've got 600 or so more to go. But we're hoping also that within this new world, we can streamline a lot of this so that we don't have 800 of these things, so that we can do what we like to call hyper-threading and take some of these workflows and actually create more derivatives from them, which means that we have real nonlinear activity happening in the space. So one of the things that we talked about, and I kind of got ahead of myself here because I'm running out of time, and so the metadata-driven workflows. You already heard me talk about it, so we'll go to the next slide. Okay, so if we're looking at this sort of our content processing way that we take content in, QC it automatically, and do all of these things, now you know where the machine learning is, and you also see where the human beings are. That's where we're actually going to make sure that the humans do not rebel against us and that the robots do not rise up and that the managers don't kill by both of them. So this is where we actually spend a lot of our time right now. We've got a lot of these things that were previously done by human beings and very manual. We've been moving them forward. And then we have the areas where the human beings come in because we don't trust the robots fully just yet. As you continue to work on your model, you become more and more comfortable. We're not comfortable yet. So if we have something go through a process and we know that, say, vendor X typically sends us something with a chroma issue, well, we know that if they send it with a chroma issue, we're going to actually push this over through the metadata of knowing who it is. We're going to push that over into, say, VidChecker, which we know is really good at chroma checks. If it is someone who is typically sending us something with audio issues, through metadata, checking over those pieces of content, pulling all of that out through the actual automatic QC, we're able to make a decision through the model that that should actually go over to Baton or come in to Pulsar, one of our other automated QC processes. These are things that help make it more efficient for us to do what we do on a daily basis, but it also requires human beings to make those final checks because machines can do a lot for us, but they can't at this time decide between what is a mistake and what is creative intent. And until they can get to that point, we still need human beings to do what they do. I tell everybody whenever I talk, human beings are the best QC process you will ever, ever, ever find. So there is a way for us to actually have a wonderful handshake with the robots. But I would say that in this picture, the robot is dressed a little bit better, so we may need to step up our game. I have a little bit more to go, but I'm not going to do that because I'm out of time. So thank you very much, and take care.
Thank you, Renard.